The clock in the war room at Southwark House showed 4 a.m. The nine men gathered in the 25-by-50-foot formal library, its walls lined with empty bookshelves, were anxiously sipping cups of coffee, their minds dwelling on the Allies' most important decision of World War II. Outside in the darkness, a gale was blowing, angry rain lashing against the windows. "The weather was terrible," recalled 53-year-old Supreme Allied Commander Dwight Eisenhower. "Southwark House was shaking. Oh, it was really storming." Given the atrocious conditions, would Eisenhower give the final go-ahead or postpone? He had left it until now, the very last possible moment, to decide whether or not to launch the greatest invasion in history. Seated before Eisenhower in upholstered chairs at a long table covered in a green cloth were the commanders of Overlord. The no-nonsense Missourian, General Omar Bradley, commander of U.S. ground forces. The British General Bernard Law Montgomery, commander of the 21st Army Group, casually attired in his trademark roll-top sweater and corduroy slacks. Admiral Sir Bertram Ramsay, the naval commander who had orchestrated the Miracle of Dunkirk, the evacuation of more than 300,000 troops from France in May 1940. The pipe-smoking Air Chief Arthur Tedder, also British. Air Chief Marshal Sir Trafford Lee Mallory, whose blunt pessimism had caused Eisenhower considerable anguish, and Major General Walter Bedell Smith, Eisenhower's Chief of Staff. A dour and tall Scotsman, 43-year-old Group Captain James Stagg, Eisenhower's chief meteorologist, entered the library and stood on the polished wood floor before Overlord's commanders. He had briefed Eisenhower and his generals every 12 hours, predicting the storm that was now rattling the windows of the library, which had already led Eisenhower to postpone the invasion from June 5th to June 6th. Then, to Eisenhower's great relief, he had forecast that there would, as he had put it with a slight smile, be rather fair conditions, beginning that afternoon and lasting for 36 hours. Once more, Stagg gave an update. The storm would indeed start to abate later that day. Eisenhower got to his feet and began to pace back and forth, hands clasped behind him, chin resting on his chest, tension etched on his face. What if Stagg was wrong? The consequences were beyond bearable, but to postpone again would mean that secrecy would be lost. Furthermore, the logistics of men and supplies, as well as the tides, dictated that another attempt could not be made for weeks, giving the Germans more time to prepare their already formidable coastal defenses. Since January, when he had arrived in England to command Overlord, Eisenhower had been under crushing, ever greater strain. Now it had all boiled down to this decision. Eisenhower alone, not Roosevelt, not Churchill, had the authority to give the final command to go to enter the continent of Europe, as his orders from on high had stated, and undertake operations aimed at the heart of Germany and the destruction of her armed forces. He alone could pull the trigger. Marshaling the greatest invasion in the history of war had been at times as terrifying as the very real prospect of failure. The last time there had been a successful cross-channel attack was 1066, almost a millennium ago. The scale of this operation had been almost too much to grasp. More than 700,000 separate items had formed the inventory of what was required to launch the assault. Dismissed by some British officers as merely a coordinator, a good mixer, the blue-eyed Eisenhower, celebrated for his broad grin and easy charm, had nevertheless imposed his will. Working 18-hour days, reviewing and tweaking plans to launch some 7,000 vessels, 12,000 planes, and 160,000 troops to hostile shores. Eisenhower had overseen vital changes to the Overlord plan. A third more troops had been added to the invasion forces, of whom fewer than 15% had actually experienced combat. Heeding General Montgomery's concerns, Eisenhower had ensured that the front was broadened to almost 60 miles of coast, with a beach codenamed Utah added at the base of the Cotentin Peninsula, farthest to the west.